the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site that covers the Arizona Cardinals. Recording on a Tuesday night, this is my co-host is on the line with me, Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the SB Nation Arizona Cardinals site. And one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast now is Full On Draft Season. Get on that show. If you haven't already, you can get half their shows already on the normal, just listening on everything else. You can add on the Patreon, two different tiers. The $2 tier gets you their bonus show each week, and $4 tier gets your bonus show and any of their written analysis that they do. This is the time of year where you want to get all that content with draft coverage coming in full on everything. But we're going to talk Cardinals. But here in episode 509, of course, we can't let the postseason games go by, right, Seth? As we now know, our championship matchups for each conference. It's going to be 49ers-Lions and Ravens-Chiefs. And this is going to – we'll talk about the games later on in the week. But, you know, this was a very good weekend of football. You had the one blowout with the Ravens and Texans, and then all the other games were competitive, that's fun. Especially as Cardinals fans, we don't have any team to root for. Like, there's different reasons why a Cardinals fan would root for the other. You're rooting for players, you're rooting against the 49ers, which I totally get. You're rooting against the Texans so they don't keep moving their draft pick down. You're rooting for Mahomes, whatever the reason is. It was a good weekend of football.
Yeah, and there was a lot of good things. I mean, obviously the frustration of being a Arizona Cardinals fan and seeing the San Francisco 49ers escape what should have been an upset win by the Green Bay Packers. I mean, the Packers were clearly the better team on that day. Just didn't work out. But for the most part, I mean, outside of the very first game of the weekend, we had entertaining, fun games. You know, you have a lot that you look at and you look back at. Obviously, the Lions-Bucks game wasn't as... It was one of those games where the score looked better than it was at the end, right? Like, you weren't ever really buying the Bucks to get back into it or win that game. But, you know, for the most part, I think we saw good football. And I think, you know, with some of those games being highly competitive, it made for a fun weekend. And then, you know, you get the best game of the weekend, the final game of the weekend, and it comes down to an idiot kicker, as Peyton Manning likes to say.
Yeah, and we're proving. By the way,
we feel bad for Tyler Bass because.
Yeah, that's.
You never want to win your bet in that way, but Jess and I were right.
You don't bet against Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs until. Like, he's at that point. Like, you don't bet against him. I'm not going to bet against him until it's happened, and then I could say, okay, there's a track. There's actually precedent for that. But what a game. You know, on my bets, I ended up 2-2 because I thought the underdogs would at least cover every game. And obviously the Texans weren't as competitive, and the Bucks weren't quite as competitive as we wanted. But my goodness, what an entertaining game. You had Josh Allen, you know, with three total touchdowns, doing what Josh Allen did in the season. You know, he led the NFL in touchdowns with 44. But you had Patrick Mahomes doing his thing, and their defense did just – and here's the crazy stat. This is the crazy stat, and that is the Chiefs only had 5 third downs the entire game. They were 1 of 5. What a weird game, because they went – from scoring points. There were scores on 9 of the first 11 possessions of the game, and then after that, nothing. And it was wild, wild decisions you had. You had the fake punt run that failed, so turnover to downs, which then looked like the Chiefs were going to win commandingly, but then Mecole Hardman fumbles the ball out of the end zone. And then, of course, you have the missed field goal at the end of the game. What a wild final quarter that just changed. It just a complete 180 from what it was earlier in the game.
Yeah, and, you know, the whole situation in all of these games this weekend, it just provides an outline of how to get to the end point, right? And when you look at all of these games, you look at, you know, the Texans-Ravens game, we've talked, and this is kind of absurd to, like, go back and look at, right? But we've talked a lot about Stroud and what he did this year and all that stuff. And then, you know, you talk about Lamar Jackson and the contract he received, you know, the holdout, all of that stuff to get to this point. And then, you know, what Lamar had a very, I don't know, would you call it efficient game? It wasn't.
Well, it was definitely not a traditional quarterback game, but here's the money stat is he became the very first player in NFL history to have 100 rushing yards, 100 passing yards, 2 rushing touchdowns, 2 passing touchdowns, and a passer rating of over 100.
Yeah, and
unprecedented.
And you look at it, and Stroud was, you know, he was fine for a rookie in that environment, 19 of 33, 175 yards. But it goes to show you, like, we talked about it last week, but, like, the ways to get to things, the ways for the Cardinals to get to this weekend next year, or in 2 years, or whatever that is, you look at it and you go, are they closer to the Texans or are they closer to the Ravens, right? And I think you and I would both agree they're closer to the Texans at this point. You know, the Ravens have one of the historically best defenses we've seen. Now, we'll talk about on Thursday how that doesn't matter when you're playing the best quarterback of a generation. But, you know, you look at that and you go, oh, man. And you look at Devin Singletary, 9 carries, 22 yards. Like the Texans ran the ball 14 times in the game. In the game. And that's just, I mean, it's a, you know, everybody talks about running backs don't matter, this and that and the other. But, like, in the end, a lot of the times, unless you have Patrick Mahomes as your team's quarterback, running the ball matters a lot. And so you look at that and you're like, you just, they weren't there yet. And then you look at the Packers, right? And you look at that Packers-Niners game. And I would think we can agree on this as well, that the Cardinals are much closer to the Packers than they are the Niners from a team building standpoint. The Packers have a little bit of a better defense right now, but, like, you look at what they overcame in this game to lose again by an idiot kicker, or at least have the chance to tie, right? And Jordan Love had an interception early. We all know about the late interception, right? That was the end of the game, but he had an interception early. He only threw for 194 yards. He did throw for the 2 touchdowns, but only 194 yards. They were in this game because Aaron Jones carried the ball 18 times for 108 yards. They were able to really control the game and keep the ball out of San Francisco's hands. But ironically, San Francisco, for some reason, wanted to put the ball in Brock Purdy's hands, and Brock Purdy tried his damnedest to give Green Bay the win.
There were a couple of, like, absolute sure thing interceptions that the defensive players just went clank. They frying pan hands on those interceptions. And that's one of those things, is that's the thing with Purdy, is, like, as good as he's been, I'm not going to take anything away from Brock Purdy's play. there has been, for both his seasons, other than the Ravens game, the just absolute best playmaking defense that we've seen overall, that he's incredibly fortunate with his turnover worthy throws. And
isn't it uncanny? I've never seen anything like it, man. I've just genuinely never seen anything like two throws that we're talking about pick sixes. I mean, we're not even talking about interceptions. We're talking about game changing pick sixes. And he threw two of them. And like you said, the defense was like, nah, I'm good. Like you just don't even know how to look at it and like make heads or tails of it sometimes. Right. Yeah, that was crazy to watch it. But you look at it and you say, hey, that Packers, especially their offense, that could be the Cardinals. I mean, you can add a Jaden Reed, a Romeo Doubs, a Bo Melton, a Christian Watson, right? You can add all of those guys basically in one offseason to a Cardinals roster. Like, it's not like we're talking about, you know, Debo and Brandon Ayuk, right? Like, we're talking about very good receivers, but like young guys that were added within the last 2 years. So again, something you can look at and say, obviously the Lions we've talked about, I think that's kind of the trajectory they're going. And that's kind of the model I think you and I would agree most. Like, that's the model the Cardinals are kind of following. You look at what the Lions, 3-13-1, Dan Campbell's first year, you know, and then they had the terrible, terrible start last year. I don't think people remember that. You know, they were 1-6.
Yeah, their defense, their offense was great, and their defense was terrible.
Yeah, they were awful, and they finished 5th in points for, and as Jess said, 28th in points against last year. And then this year, I mean, again, 5th in points for, but 23rd. And you see the steady climb.
But there was one metric. They were one of the best run defenses in the NFL.
Right. And you see number two overall in that category. And so you see that steady climb, right? You see what they've done to get better. And it shows in their games. I mean, 24-23, 31-23. Like, it's not like they're winning like the Ravens did. It's not like it was 34-10. And you're like, oh, that was – you're like, holy crap. Like, that was – hold on to your butt the whole game type of situation, right? Like, and a lot of that is they drafted well, especially in the trenches. I mean, Penei Sewell, Aiden Hutchinson, those guys all make huge differences. But it was the depth picks in those situations. And you look at that, and that's hopefully we'll see the Cardinals continue to make those picks. But, I mean, guys like Alan McNeil, you know, Josh Pascal, John Kaminsky, all these guys that they picked up over the last couple of years have really become, you know, integral parts of that defense that is now good enough. They're not great, good enough to get you to the NFC Championship game, right? And hopefully to the Super Bowl. I mean, Jess and I are going to put on our Lions hats. I don't think either of us are going to pick them, but we're both going to put on our Lions hats for that one.
Right, well, yeah, because if there's one thing that I look at this, especially the way the Niners have played the last 2 weeks or during the last game, and from what we saw from San Francisco late in the year, the Lions will give them trouble. I don't know, like, ultimately they'll beat them, but that will be a good game because, one, they can do a lot of things offensively, and their greatest strength defensively will slow what San Francisco does offensively. And we'll talk about that later in the week. But like, just on paper, I'm like, this will be a really good game. As great as San Francisco has been all year and the flaws that the Lions have, that the things that the Lions do well will make a really good matchup against San Francisco.
Yeah, and that's the hope, right? And then there's really not much to talk about in terms of Cardinals-esque in that last game, and people can lament whatever they want. They can, you know, they can lament Kyler and whatever. the reality is there's one Patrick Mahomes. like Josh Allen is probably the second best quarterback in the NFL, and he probably has been for the last 3 or 4 years. I mean, outside of maybe Tom Brady when he was still doing his thing. And Josh Allen has as many Super Bowl appearances as you and I. Like, it's just like sometimes there is that guy that is just and it's, isn't it kind of ironic that one left and now another one's here, right? Like seven Super Bowls, 10 total Super Bowls, with 7 Super Bowl wins for Tom Brady, and now six consecutive AFC championship games for Pat. Like, just like, close your mind. You can wish as much as you want to find the next Patrick Mahomes. It's not happening. Like,
even the trajectory that he's on, it, like what Tom Brady did, that's in, like, as amazingly good as Patrick Mahomes, he's still so far behind Brady.
Right.
And to think that he will actually match Brady is really hard to project, just because it's so incredibly difficult to do what they did.
Yeah, and so you just look at it. Those are, you know, it's fun to look at the scope, and you see the path to divisional weekend. You see Houston, Green Bay, especially, like I said, Detroit. You see those teams, and then you look at Baltimore, and you say, hey, that's probably 3 years away. Not necessarily a bad thing, but, you know, 3 years away of building, you know, growing as an organization, finding the right pieces and things. San Francisco, same type of thing. You know, that's a team that, you know, you look at it, for they've had different guys in the backfield, or, you know, under center, and they're still in the same spot. And then Kansas City and Buffalo, they're the lucky ones that have the quarterbacks that make you a competitor every year. And that's what we're hoping that Kyler can get to. But, you know, at the end of the day, there's only a couple of those guys, and Kansas City and Buffalo have them. And so you look at it, that's what's made it fun. And now we get to watch, you know, it's kind of ironic that we watch Baltimore and Kansas City, where it's, I don't want to say all, but a lot of it's about the quarterbacks, against Detroit and San Francisco, and so much of it is about not the quarterbacks, right? Like, you're like, oh, which one of these guys is going to screw it up for their team, versus the other game where you're like, who's going to win it for Baltimore and Kansas City?
Yeah. Coming up next on the Rise of Sierra podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk a little bit. Let's move to our Cardinals-centric part of the show. We're talking Cardinals coaches, college all-star games. This is kind of interesting. That's coming up next on Rise of Sierra. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web. It is college all-star season. We have the Shrine game coming up in a couple of weeks. In fact, next week, are the two big ones. That would be the Shrine game on Thursday, and then the Senior Bowl on Sunday. That's going to stretch a lot of team evaluators thin to, you know, evaluate, interview, scout the players at both bowl games. But the Cardinals are going to have a little extra thing. And I forgive me if I can't recall this, but it feels unprecedented, because the Cardinals have a whole bunch of staffers, assistant coaches, who are on the coaching staff of the Senior Bowl and the Shrine game. So we've got, here's kind of the rundown right now for the Shrine game. They have their, so you've got passing game coordinator, receivers coach Drew Terrell. He is the offensive coordinator and play caller for the Shrine Games East team. And they have 4 assistants that will be on the Senior Bowl staff. Israel Wolfork, their quarterbacks coach, going to coach quarterbacks for the national team. Autry Denson, their running backs coach, going to coach the running backs on the American team, I think it is. Then you've got Chris Cook, their assistant offensive line coach, is going to coach offensive line during the season for one of the teams. And then an extra one is that the Cardinals offensive quality control coach, Connor Singer, who has coached to help coach quarterbacks. He's done offensive quality control. He will coach receivers at the Senior Bowl. I cannot, and maybe it's just bad memory, I can't remember a time where the Cardinals were so involved with these All-Star games, ever.
No, and a lot of it is that they changed how the staffs work, and they're not doing full coaching staffs, remember? Because typically it was like...
You take two of the bad teams and you're like...
Right. So in this instance, it would be like the Bears and the Patriots staffs would coach the Senior Bowl. So this year, it's like you said, it's a lot of the... just a lot of the staffs from the top picking teams. So a lot of staff from each of those teams. So that's why it is kind of unprecedented, especially to see them in two different things. I mean, you've got... You've got Drew Terrell doing the Shrine Game, and he's the offensive coordinator at the Shrine Game, and that's kind of crazy, right? Because he'll be at the Shrine Game, and yet then you've got like you said, Wolfork, the national team quarterback. Quarterback coach for it at the Senior Bowl, and then you've got Autry Denson at the Senior Bowl, and then like you said, Connor Singer, and then Chris Cook helping out at the O line of the Senior Bowl. Now and this is the crazy thing to me: Denson's coaching the American. Denson and Singer are coaching the American team. And Wolfork and Cook are coaching the national team.
Yeah, it's kind of so fun. They're getting both sides.
They're getting both sides, which is crazy to me. And then did it say the East? So he's coaching the East. Drew Terrell is coaching the East offensive coordinator. So it's cool, man. Like, and they're gonna have guys that are and you look at how important it was. last year, right?
Izzy Wolfork, he was part of the coaching staff last year. I think for receivers, and he was the one that he was one of the guys that brought Michael Wilson's name up to the decision makers.
Right. And then also he was he got to spend a lot of time with Elijah Higgins, so that was important for when they put that claim in on Higgins. So it's kind of cool to have five guys on three different coaching staffs during kind of important All-Star. And you look at the names, right? I mean, this is something we'll go over in a couple of weeks when the Senior Bowl and stuff is here. But like, you look at the names for like the Senior Bowl, and especially for who... Denson and Cook and Singer will work with, because I mean, we're not overly thinking too much about the quarterback position. Maybe they take one on day two or three, but not anything we're thinking too much about, right? But you look at the names, like at the running back position, Ray Davis, Dylan Lobb is a small school kid from New Hampshire who put up like just insane numbers at New Hampshire. Wide receiver, obviously a huge need. Malachi Corley, Xavier Leggett, Ladd McConkey, Ricky Pearsall. Obviously we're familiar with him anyways, but Ricky Pearsall, Devontae Walker, like Jamari Thrash, all of these guys are going to have a chance to show something. But then on the offensive line, I mean, Talisi Fuaga, Tyler Guyton, who was just mocked to the Cardinals by Mel Kiper Jr. today, we're recording on a Tuesday, in Mel Kiper's first mock draft of the season, Jordan Morgan, Patrick Paul, there's too many to name in terms of interior offensive linemen, but guys that fit what the Cardinals need. And obviously you can't get everybody, right? Like it's tough, but I do wish they had some representation on the defensive side of the ball, just because they just need so much on the defense. And we've talked about that, but you know, and then on the other side, at the Shrine game, it's improving its roster. You know, it's still not up to the standard of the Senior Bowl, but it's getting much, much better. And you look at, you know, some of the names, especially, like, you know, you look at the running backs. I know Jonathan Brooks is hurt, but he's going to get to spend a lot of time with Jonathan Brooks, the Texas running back that blew out his knee. That's something that's kind of important, right? Because you and I have talked about it. Like, maybe they need a running back, not early, but, you know, late day two or day three. Again, the wide receivers, there's some names on these wide receivers groups that are going to be interesting and could fit what the Cardinals want to do. And then obviously the offensive linemen, same type of thing. You look at it, there's some guys that really could come in and potentially make an impact for the Cardinals. And you've got coaches that are just up close and personal with it. And that, I mean, to me, that's the biggest benefit of this, is that if you trust these guys as coaches and evaluators of talent, which the Cardinals obviously have so far, then it's just going to be really, I don't want to say easy, but it'll be really beneficial for what you're looking for as you head into the off season, because you get an up close and personal look, not just about their abilities, but something that I feel like the Cardinals missed a lot on in the Steve Keim era was who they are as players, right? Like, and how they function as players. That's the one thing that I will say about this class that from last year, I will say that maybe more than anything, we got guys that have put a lot of time and energy and effort in. And that's not to say that the guys under Keim didn't, but, you know, we've talked about the, I don't know, how do I put it gently? You know, the lack of care. Maybe care is not the right word.
But weird as well, because as much as Steve Keim preached, guys got to love football. They got to just love football. And I'm like, then how did you miss on
so many guys that didn't love football?
Right.
That was the baffling thing. And so I think, you know, I think for this, that's the nice thing, is that they have that opportunity to kind of, and it's just a week. It's not like it's forever, yeah. But you do get to see that, that side of things. And
you get to see them in the meeting rooms. It's not just observations from the sideline, from the stands. Right. You get to see them in meeting rooms and how you get to see their study habits.
And not just that, but their focus, right? Like, yeah. Are they engaged? Are they wanting to learn? Something that you and I have talked about quite a bit. And, you know, I think that you and I have had this conversation, and it falls on deaf ears a lot, but I saw somebody that is a ex-NFL player, and now I can't remember who. I got to start sending these things to you if I want to use them as examples. But it was basically like, yeah, there's no teaching going on. That was one of the things that we talked about with this coaching staff, is how much time they spent teaching. But they... like, there's not as much time to, especially offensive line, to spend time to teach these guys, and I'll say it this way, these kids, how to block properly or the technique and things like that. And that's why it's important.
Three-point stances.
Right, right. When Jonathan Cooper had never been in a three-point stance, and he's like, huh? And you know, to that point, it's like now you get to see if they are even willing to put the time in to listen to you as a coach. Because if they're not, then you kind of know, like, oh, I don't even want this guy like, he may be great, but I'd rather err on the side of like, oh, he's not showing me it's something he wants to do.
Yeah.
As opposed to the other side of things where it's like, oh, he's, you know, he is great, but he just doesn't have the desire to learn. And you're like, oh, we've got a lot of those guys in this, in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
Let's not do that again.
Another thing that's, I think that's kind of cool about the whole assistance thing is that, especially with this group of assistants, so many of them are still progressing. They're young assistants, so they're still ascending and working through things. It's different than, say, you bring in a defensive coordinator who's been a defensive coordinator. You bring in a position coach. So many of their guys were in positions for the first time. So obviously we know Monty Os, first-time GM, Jonathan Gannett, first-time head coach, Nick Rallis, first-time defensive coordinator, Drew Petz, first-time offensive coordinator. But it wasn't just that. So many other position coaches were in that position for the first time. Ezra Wolfork, first-time quarterbacks coach, Drew Terwell. He coached receivers, but then he was one who had coached receivers, but then he got a coordinator title. So many of their guys were receiving promotions and so are still ascending in their careers. So it's good to see that happen out. Like guys like Bruce Arians, they had guys like that, but they also had a number of, like, you had your Amos Jones, you had your, you know, Todd Bowles, you've got guys, or Brenson Buck, you've got your position coaches that have been Stump Mitchell, who had been a position coach for a long time. And so you get to see that, and so you get to see some of the ascension of guys, and they get to test their depth. They get to test the depth right now before they get promoted. So they have something for their resume. It's like, you know, Drew Terwell wants to be an offensive coordinator, but if he's given an offensive coordinator and he's out of his depths, you know, he will know a little bit more about that from this next week.
Yeah, and that's a huge, huge thing, because like you said, it gives them a chance to show who they are. Like, you know, I think there's a lot of times where position coaches get stuck in position coaching, and then they never kind of ascend. And so they tend to coast as well. And we all do. And let's be honest. I mean, we all,
you find your groove and then,
right. And then you don't, you know, change or do anything like that. And so, you know, it's just an interesting chance for these guys, and you have to be excited for them, especially that's the other thing with this group, is it's mostly young guys too, right? Like, it's younger coaches that are kind of, like you said, hungry, and they want more. And I think that's something that was maybe missing a little bit from the Arians era, is that these guys just didn't tend to, they weren't hungry enough. You know what I'm saying? Like, these coaches were very good coaches, but they weren't trying to ascend. And there is a fine, you know, place for that, where you're talking about, like, making sure they're not doing their own thing, right? Like, that they're doing this for the team and everything like that. But at the same time, that they're competitive and they're wanting to have the best position group on the field. And you know, to me, like, if you had to, like, signal one guy that did yeoman's work last year for the Cardinals coaches, it's probably the defensive line coach, right? Because, like, he was dealt a pretty bad hand to start with. And then he just kept having to basically
train. Guy off the street.
And so, yeah, so, like, that's what's cool about this group, is I feel like it's a bunch of young, hungry guys that want to improve, not just as coaches, but where they're at in the NFL. And that, I think, is going to get them far in terms of just overall their coaching lives.
Coming up next on the Rise of Sierra podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on and talk about the Cardinals and their own free agents that are scheduled. Should we keep them? Should we sign them? That's how we do that. That's coming up next on Rise of Sierra. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast. Mr. Cardinals talk on the web. We'll talk about Cardinals and the free agents, the guys that are seeing their contracts expire in March. We're going to go through each guy and basically say, keep him, let him go. And they're probably going to be a whole bunch where like, maybe, or doesn't matter. Let's start with the offensive side of the ball. There's not a ton of offensive free agents. They don't have any quarterback free agents, so don't need to worry about that. They have one running back free agent on their roster, which is Marlon Mack, who's coming off of injured reserve. Marlon Mack, unrestricted free agent. Re-sign or let go?
I would just let go. I mean, he's a guy that you'll probably be able to bring in,
Middle of training camp?
I was going to say middle of training camp, if that's something you really want.
Yeah, he was off the street then anyway. And, like, their running back situation is solid. You've got James Conner, you've got Michael Carter, and you've got Amari Mercado, and then whatever guys that signed futures deals. We're not going to worry about those guys. So running back, yeah, Mac, you don't need to make a priority. Wide receiver, they have two free agents. One who's going to be back. That's Greg Dortch. He's an exclusive rights free agent, so we don't even worry about them. He's in a weird situation, just so you know, that he is in line for a fourth-year salary, so he'll make $1.08 million or the raise from that, but he only has two credited years, so he isn't even eligible for restricted free agency because he's gotten the bumps for years credited, but not the accrued years to qualify for free agency. So he is still stuck. Like, the Cardinals are going to bring him back. He's going to make, you know, $1.08 million or probably like $1.11 after the new minimum bumps go into effect. But he'll be back. But the other guy's Hollywood Brown. That's the big, perhaps the biggest what if. Should the Cardinals re-sign Hollywood Brown?
So, Sport Track has his contract for $60 million. I don't think they do guarantees on Sport Track. So if it's $460 million, and
I don't know how he's going to get that much.
Well, I mean, that's Spot Track.
That's Spot Track. It's Spot Track's. It's their projected market value, which can be it's basing it on other comps. He is a guy that's had a 1,000-yard season. He's looked great on film, except the end of the season when he was hurt. And so, you know, someone could definitely make a splash with him. I'd like to say, yes, make Hollywood a priority, but not that much. If his contract goes as high as, say, the Christian Kirk deal, I think that's rich, but still reasonable.
So let me ask you this, because PFF has him getting a 1-year $12 million deal.
Score. Done.
Yeah.
Done. That's an easy deal to me.
And I would actually go up to 15 on that. 1 year, 15 million. Even if you did 2 years, 30 million with 1 year guaranteed, or, you know, 17 million guaranteed, I'd be okay with that.
Yeah.
Because it gives you a veteran presence for the next couple of years. Dortch is back, and then you're still able to, you know, and let's be honest, it does give you a little flexibility. If you don't bring back Hollywood, here are your options. So I'll just, you know, real quick, and I know we'll go over this another time, but these are your options. T. Higgins.
Very expensive.
Yeah, projected about $22 million a year. Michael Pittman projected about $22 million a year. Mike Evans projected about $23 million a year. By the way, Mike Evans is 31.
Now, granted, his production is amazing.
Fantastic.
Age 31 is where it happens.
Yeah, and you're talking about, I mean, you're talking like 3 years, $70 million you're going to have to sign this guy to at 31. Calvin Ridley, who's going to be 30 this year, about $16.5 million. So those are your options. I mean, the other names out there, Darnell Mooney, Gabe Davis, you know, they're not nothing to write home about, right? Like, Gabe Davis is a good player, but would you rather give Gabe Davis $14 million or Marquise Brown $14 million? Like, that's – and so that's the thing. So if you don't sign Brown, I don't – just me, I don't think you're in on Evans, Pittman, or Higgins, who are, you know, the only real upgrades to Brown, let's be honest. You're not in on those three, I would assume. You have to draft. I mean, you basically like corner yourself into having to draft, whether it's Marvin Harrison Jr., Romo Odunze, or Malik Nabers. You have to draft one of them.
It feels like, and I know they don't like to back themselves up into a position like that, but that's just kind of how it goes. I would like to say, like, lean yes, absolutely. I'd love to see Hollywood back. Tight end, their one tight end that's a free agent is Jeff Swaim. Assuming the injury isn't a long-term one, he's a perfect guy to have on the roster. I would say yes, bring him back. He's not going to be expensive. And if you don't bring him back, you're going to have to get a guy just like him.
Right. And he's not, like you said, he's not going to be expensive. So you bring him back. You know, there's no this is the funny thing about all these sites. There's no contract breakdown for Jeff Swaim because you're going to get him for 1 year, 1.5, 1.7, whatever the vet minimum is for a guy like him. So that's where you're at for that. You know, I like Swaim. Like you said, the biggest thing with Swaim is simply the knee or whatever the injury was. I'm guessing a knee, but you know, but that's the biggest thing for him.
Yeah. Offensive line, the names aren't big. Like, the Cardinals, actually, very interestingly enough, if you look at the way they kind of structured their contracts over the last year, they're in a decent place because here are the names of their free agent offensive linemen, which puts them in a good spot. Carter O'Donnell, he's an exclusive rights guy. If they like him and they seem to like him well enough, he will be back, because he can't sign elsewhere if they offer him a contract. You've got Elijah Wilkinson. You've got Pat Elflein, who's on injured reserve all year. Tristan Colon. And you've got Keith Ismail. He's technically a restricted free agent. I can't imagine that for a backup center that they're going to tender him, a qualifying offer. So he will just be a regular free agent, I'm sure. But, you know, like any of those that won, none of those names scream got to have them back. Carter O'Donnell, he's going to be back. So let's look at the names. Wilkinson, Cologne, Elflein, and Ismail. Let's cross Elflein off the list. He gets hurt every time he comes into a football team. And frankly, Yelda Froholt showed that he's up to the task for starting center. So, yeah, forget about Elflein. What about Cologne? Would you bring him back? Like, should they prioritize bringing him back at even his depth?
You know, it's one of those things where I'm not overly concerned about him. His contract isn't absurd.
No, I like that he can play guard and center.
Yeah, but neither is Wilkinson's. And but the other thing is, you got to remember, is that they've got John Gaines, who they're hoping can do that as well.
Yes.
But that, I mean, that makes it difficult, let's be honest, that to trust a guy that's never played and
it's coming off an ACL.
Yeah, coming off an injury. So that makes it difficult.
Elijah Wilkinson, for me, is like, meh, sure, whatever.
I think you bring him back. I mean, if it's 1.7 again.
Guard-tackle combo gives you a nice guard-tackle combo because he can play tackle.
1.2. I'm sorry. I said that incorrectly, by the way.
Yeah. But I mean, 1.2, he had 940,000 guaranteed this last year. But, you know, Wilkinson, sure, bring him back. But I don't, you know, I'm not screaming, say, yeah, got to have him. Like, sure. Like, for him, sure. Cologne, sure. Elfline, no thanks. Ismail, whatever. He was barely active. He is young. That's the one thing you could say about Ismail is as a potential backup. You could he can play guard. He can play center. But yeah,
and it's crazy. It's crazy to me that Cologne made more money than Wilkinson too.
Yeah, and he like I can't remember how they claim Cologne.
Yeah,
He was under contract already. So that's what it was. Is that
yeah? No, I know that. It's just insane to me that that's even. Like that's the thing, because it's not that Cologne was bad by any means. And
no.
I know,
here's the thing. Wilkinson wasn't ever like he's been a fringe starter for his career. He's been an up and down guy who like you start some, you don't start some. Like he's been kind of like a team's sixth offensive lineman, you know?
Yep.
That's gotten playing time. Yeah. And so offense on the offensive side of the ball, it's like they're in a pretty good place. They don't have the free agents that they have, you're like, sure, maybe. But yeah, let's look at the other side. Coming next on the Rises Here podcast, Mr. Cardinals talking about. Let's go to the defensive side of the ball. Who are the free agents that they have coming up? Keep them, let them go. That's coming next on the Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, Best Our Cardinals Talk on the web. Defensive line. So we're looking at the defensive guy. There's far more free agents coming up for the Cardinals on the defensive side of the ball. Here are the defensive linemen. Carlos Watkins, LJ Collier, Jonathan Ledbetter, and Lucky Fotu. Watkins, Collier, Ledbetter ended their season on injured reserve. Ledbetter technically is an exclusive rights guy. He's coming off an ACL. They will, I fully expect them to re-sign him. The problem is, will he ever play? Unless they want him in the building to potentially sign the year after that. I think that. But Watkins, I don't prioritize because you can get a guy like Watkins. But Collier, what do you think about Collier? I'm torn on this one.
Yeah, I'd actually bring back all of them. I mean, Ledbetter was very cheap, but I'd bring back Collier and Watkins as well. And the reason I say that is because you're talking about combined maybe $3 million or $3.5 million.
Fotu I like because he's so young. He's 25.
Yeah, yeah. Fotu, and he's going to be about 1.2. He's not going to be crazy because he hasn't played enough to get more. I mean, if somebody gives him like $3 million a year, that's one of those where you just go. But look, I mean, I hope it works out. And for Fotu, you and I always talk about it. We will always cheer on guys to go get as much money.
Yep.
But like, you can't pay a guy $3 million a year that has never played.
Yeah, and I can see, you know, if you want to roll the dice, but if you're going to bring guys in, as long as they bring in other guys as well, I would like Fotu, yes. Collier, I think so. And Watkins, I'm the most meh on because ideally you're going to bring in, you're going to prioritize that position. You're going to have simply better players you're bringing in.
Yeah, and this is the ironic thing is that this is probably the year to need interior defensive linemen. Just from a the talent standpoint that is just going to be out there.
They're going to be pricey, but you could Justin Madubuike, he's
well, getting, the high end guys.
Chris Jones, Madubuike.
Christian Wilkins, Leonard Williams,
ooh,
DJ Reader, like those guys are all phenomenal. But you have second tier guys like Grover Stewart, Sheldon Rankins, Tier Tart that are all there. And then you have veterans, you know, Fletcher Cox, Daquan Jones, Quentin Jefferson, all guys that would, you know, immediately.
like even third tier guys, they're immediately immediate upgrades.
Yeah. Yeah. And so like this is the year, if you need one, this is the year to need one.
Go to outside linebacker. The truth is the Cardinals only have one edge guy, and that's Jesse Licata, and he's an exclusive rights free agent.
And he's a great fullback, so you know why not.
Yeah,
right?
He'll be back. And so their outside linebacker position, they essentially don't lose anyone unless they cut anyone. Inside linebacker, though, lots of turnover. Lots of turnover. You've got Josh Woods, Chris Barnes, and Zeke Turner. And so that's a position you could definitely, like, you've got your Kaiser White. You've got Owen Papo coming back. Now the question is, what do you do with these guys? Do you prioritize Woods again? I don't see anything wrong with that. I think Woods as a secondary linebacker to White was actually really, really good. Barnes is a sure. Turner is also sure because he's basically just special teams. He knows Jeff Rogers. And so he's going to get a high low end contract. It's just a matter of whether he has, you know, special teams guys like that, high-end special teams guys, usually play out their role with their first team and have to go elsewhere. We've seen guys do that before. Josh Woods, for example, for one. Justin Bethel did it with the Cardinals, kind of played as. Now, granted, he was also supposed to be a starter-type guy, and so he priced himself out of that role. Lorenzo Alexander eventually grew out of that role. You kind of go across the board, guys like that. Chris Banjo was one of them. He was a great special teams player for New Orleans and then found a home here for a while. Charles Washington, you kind of play your role for a bit. And Zeke, he's been there since 2018. If you want to think about this, that undrafted class of free agents, the undrafted rookies in 2018 for the Cardinals, that was a really good group because you've got Dennis Gardeck, you've got Trent Sherfield, you've got Zeke Turner, and they're all doing quite well.
Yeah, and that's a big group. My thing with Turner, and I know how important he is from that standpoint, and there's not – it's tough to put a price on it, but he's making basically combine what Barnes and Woods makes.
Yes. That's the thing with that. And in this particular defensive scheme, when it was Vance Joseph, he was the perfect backup Isaiah Simmons, right? Because he's the poor man's Isaiah Simmons. He's the former defensive back over Washington. He can do, like, you can have him mirror a lot of the things that Isaiah Simmons did. It's a little bit less so. Because that second linebacker spot there, that second inside linebacker spot is more traditional. Like if you look at, they had Kaiser White and they had Josh Woods, real like linebackers, and that's what Kaiser White, who started coming into the NFL as a defensive back, but has become a linebacker, and Zeke is a low end linebacker.
Yeah, exactly, and so. You know, that's a tough one. I like him. I just don't know if I'd like at $2 million if that's worth it with all the other needs on this team. But that's the one that kind of trips me up. Not because I don't like Turner and he hasn't been great for this franchise in terms of everything. But, you know, if there does come a time and a place where you just, you know, have to move on.
Right. And you know, even if you don't, like, who knows if Owen Papo has a immediate future as a starter, as much as he played on special teams last season, he could be Zeke Turner on special teams.
Right. Exactly.
Go to cornerback. Lots of cornerbacks who are free agents. Not lots. There's three of them. You've got Antonio Hamilton. You've got Rashad Fenton, who is on injured reserve. All in the same with Daryl Baker. Daryl Baker is an exclusive rights free agent. If they want him back, he'll be back. So it basically comes down to Antonio Hamilton and Rashad Fenton. Rashad Fenton is very much a, yeah, whatever. Rashad Fenton is whatever. Antonio Hamilton now he's age 30. He's about to turn 31. I don't know what they're looking for at the cornerback position, but you're probably I don't know if he's a priority to bring back, because I think it highly depends on what they bring in. Because if they bring in a vet guy, they've got young guys on their roster. Like, they've got young cornerbacks on their roster now. You've got Garrett Wilson. You've got Keytrell Clark. You've got Devon Wilson. You've got Starling Thomas. You've got four young guys that are coming. They're all rookies. They're coming off their rookie season. And Hamilton was kind of their best cornerback. But shouldn't you want your best cornerback to be much better than Antonio Hamilton? That's kind of where I'm at. I'm like, yes, bring him back, but I'm like, it's not important to me. It's not important for me for them to bring Antonio Hamilton back.
Yeah, and I mean, again, going through the list, I mean, obviously, Jalen Johnson of the Bears is probably going to get franchise. Legarius Sneed is an interesting one because they got to pay either Chris Jones or Legarius Sneed. They can't franchise both of them. He's a guy to watch. I mean, he's going to be a guy that gets paid good money. But Kendall Fuller out of Washington, you know, new situation. So would he be able to, you know, will he escape that place? Chidobe Awuzie from the Bengals, you know, Steven Nelson from the Texans. I mean, this is again a good year to have to need a corner. If you to get one veteran like you're talking about, and then go find another one in the draft type thing.
And then we look at they have no safeties of note. The SpotTrack lists Buda Baker, but he's under contract. They call it a club option. It's literally, that was part of his contract. Every year is technically a club option. There's just no guarantees left. So I don't, the Cardinals, I mean, they're not going to let him go. They're not just going to cut him.
Right.
That's not even a consideration. Special teams, they have Aaron Brewer and Blake Gillikin, who are both set to be free agents. I think, as long as like Matt Prater's still around, you have to probably prioritize both of them.
Yes.
Although Aaron Brewer was a late signing last year, but it was because he was coming off the injury. So assuming that, unless it's an Andy Lee situation, I would see you re-signing them both, unless the guy Matt Hembro that they have on injured reserve was there, the undrafted kid that they got out of Oklahoma State. They just see him as the guy.
Yeah, and he got injured, so they had to bring back Brewer type situation.
Yeah, so like definitely Gillikin, like he did a really good job for you. He goes and set franchise's records for net and punting average, and then you're just not going to bring him back. Right.
Right. Exactly.
Although I will say this, keeping the dream alive, you know, there's a kid, Austin McNamara. Texas Tech, he's a Gilbert kid. He's a good one. Like if they want to go out, I would definitely, like, plus I know their family. They would be a dream come true for them to get drafted by the Cardinals or to get signed by the Cardinals. So, you know, if they're not going to go Gillikin, I mean, Austin McNamara is going to be a good one. He's been really, really good all 4 years in school. So, but that's for another thing, because that's probably the plug we'll get. We'll probably give him another plug later on, because honestly, we're not talking about punters in the draft, right?
Yeah, you never know.
With that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Seared Podcast, Mr. of Cardinals Talk of the Web. We'll come back again later this week where we will have more Cardinals content. Of course, we will preview the conference championship games with picks, predictions, and prop bets. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Roop. This is episode 509. Thanks for listening. As always, we'll be back in a couple of days.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise Up Red Sea, Be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.